Yes,
Yeah, about that. Yeah, that's what last, no, this spring, Mike averaged about $700 a steer. But they've gone down now.
They've gone down, that's what I understand.
Quite a bit.
So four steers would not buy you a tractor by any means.
Two times.
Are you kidding?
Right.
The other day, Bruno was looking in the, where they advertise secondhand machinery. The giant, it's a big, all they do is advertise all kinds of used and new machinery.
But Wheel and Deal.
A tractor, just one size bigger than one our son-in-law bought here recently, used one, $129,000 for a used tractor. It had been used 10 years already. You know, so you can imagine.
Yeah,
now, I said, you know, that guy is dreaming if he thinks he's going to get $129,000, but nonetheless, you know.
He's asking that much.
It's asking, that's right.
Yeah. Well,
the first tractor that you had, that was a pacemaker?
Yeah.
Yes.
Pacemaker.
Well,
yeah,
pacemaker.
Where was that manufactured?
Massey Harris pacemaker.
Oh, Massey Harris.
Yeah. That's the one we saved me at
$1,300. My goodness.
Yeah.
And that was when you were first married?
Yeah.
Well, there's just really no comparison, that's for sure.
So well, you just think about cars only.
Yeah. But listen, now, the farmers are in debt like this. What about the quality of life? Do you think you people were happier and better off in a lot of ways than the farmers are today? Are the farmers taking trips to Hawaii?
A few are.
Which kind of farmer?
I tell you what's the difference between us and between the young generation.
Right.
We was farming and we figured for tomorrow and after tomorrow. And the young generation just think for today and to hell with tomorrow.
You think that's the problem? You think that's part of their downfall?
A little bit.
So I figured.
A little bit. Because there are people even that owe these hundred thousands of dollar debt, they've got it borrowed and they've got to be paying it off, but if they get a good crop, they give themselves that holiday. There are a few that are doing that.
Yes.
And a lot of other farmers that are taking holidays are the older ones who have
made it,
who have not necessarily made it. They have put their kids into debt in many cases, from my point of view.
Yes.
Because the kids have borrowed money
to
buy the land from their dad. The dads have now set themselves up with a home for their old age, and they're retired with, you know, a fairly good bank account, and they're able to take holidays in Hawaii as well as trips. But I wouldn't say that generally farmers are able to take holidays in Hawaii or anywhere else, maybe to the lake.
Not the younger generation.
No.
And like you say, if the farm, some of these fellows go up to work, they work to
keep
the farm going.
That's right.
Well, I guess people did that years ago too. Like you said, you were shooting rabbits and you were working in the bush and with the lumber. And what else would you have done?
Prior to that, like when Dad came here in, I think it's about 1911, he used to come to Athabasca. He filed on a homestead. I think it was $10 that they got a homestead. They brushed in the summer months, and in the winter they went to the States or to southern Alberta, you know, various places, Drumheller and that, and mined.
Oh, yes.
And they supplemented their, and this, and then they started raising, you know, fur, like fox particularly.
The farmers did?
Yes. My dad had foxes, and I think your dad even helped him.
Old man Butner and
Mr. Butner did when we came in the third.
Bill Smells was a farmer.
And Charlie Gura,
yes, they used to raise foxes particularly.
Just especially to sell?
To sell the fur. The pelts, yes.
$500.
$500?
Butner had those silver fox. So like we come 1929, so he sold two or three.
Well, that's an awful lot of money for those days.
Yeah.
Where would they get the foxes to begin with?
They would go on the river banks and take them out of the dens
when
they were babies.
And then raise them.
Oh, of course, they kept females and males to breed after too, but you know, to start out, they... even if they had their own females already, they still went in the dens and...
I'm not sure if Bodnar had or your dad, but anyhow.
Well, Dad and Bodner and Charlie Dora, all of them.
But them like to breed.
They
so
would
that's
try.
Why them yeah. Start to race. I think your dad had a silver dog. And them Gura and Bodner took to
the females.
Like for the male.
Yeah,
oh.
to breed.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess some of them also, I remember my dad went down south when his harvest was finished here,
yeah.
and he would go down south and
well,
help
that
the
was,
farms
yeah,
there
that was,
as well.
Yeah. I was going to mention that. Then there was this trend of going south
uh-huh.
to help harvest. And even Mike.
Yeah, in 1938.
Did you?
Yeah.
You went south. How far south did you go? Dad worked in Big Bell.
Heisler.
Heisler.
Strome. Uncle Mike went to Strome.
Did he?
Yes.
In those days, the farmers down south didn't have drought. They had raised crops,
oh,
did they?
Yes, they had.
Not like these
there.
Days.
Well, we went back after 41 years. And it's changed an awful the same trend is here.
Is that right?
Like, there a half section was a big farm and it was all under cultivation.
Right, because
so.
They don't have latrines
yeah.
and whatnot.
So now, like, there was this...
After
41 years, this fellow that Billy McKelvey worked for,
right.
he's bought up all of the fellow I worked for isn't there anymore. He
so
bought up five farmers.
So he
My
farms
goodness.
About 10 quarters of land, whereas before... each of them just had a half section,
half
and they
section.
Were considered big farmers.
Then.
And they hired men to come and stoop the grain for them and help with the thrashing.
Yeah.
You know, the quality of life has changed, Vi, because I think in most homes now they do have the conveniences.
Right. They
like
have,
you know, they have power. They have natural gas or propane, if not natural gas.
Yes.
So from that point of view. The comforts in the homes, you know,
are
central
there.
Heating, all that sort of stuff.
That's right.
Homes are better quality, modern homes,
right.
you know, with modern furniture.
Modern conveniences, right
That's
down
right.
to the TV.
So, they may have debts, they may have to work hard and all the rest of it, but the home life is of a higher standard and you know, there's no doubt about that.
That's right.
Part of that is because of the income. Part of it is because of the changes that have been in our country all over. Yeah, that's
yes.
right. I mean,
yes.
those conveniences came about all over, so
that's
everybody true. Strives for them. And like Anne mentioned before, now the farmers work harder to raise the means with which to keep up these
mm-hmm.
conveniences.
Mm-hmm.
And even their clothing and that. I remember when I was raising a family, I never thought of, you know, I had clothes given to me from people that lived in town, and I made them over for the children.
Mm-hmm.
And I myself never bought
new clothes,
new article of clothing for years on end.
Yes,
you just there was just no need of it. You never went anywhere.
Right.
All you know, all you did is worked on the farm, and you didn't need a
but still
a nice assortment of clothing
that's right.
by any means.
But
then.
Even though, like you say, you still had time, more time. To visit with the neighbors?
No, I wouldn't say that.
You don't have. You don't think so?
No, not. Mind you, we're semi-retired now, but I didn't go and visit anywhere. By the time I finished, you know.
Don't say that.
Chores
you used to come to our place couple time.
I hear
church meetings. Church meetings. No, no. Outside of the church, going to a
church,
church
was a big thing for people
yes.
in the country.
And it was a means of getting together.
It was a social, kind of
yeah.
social thing.
And
yes.
the school. We haven't mentioned the school. Woman's
school.
Woman's
school.
School.
That's
and
right.
That was all that, to actually socialize, we did very little of that.
But we were talking at the archives, and you know, people had time for surprise parties
oh,
and dances
yes.
and
oh, yes.
and
yes.
socials.
Yes, that's
oh, yes.
right.
And all sorts of things. Ball games in the summer,
that's
picnics.
Right. Oh yes.
We even had like our farm group ladies in our district. We had come as your parties. If somebody came to your place,
yes.
you just went with them like you were. What you left,
whatever
what you were doing, you went. 4 or 5 ladies got together.
Yes. yes.
Come as your parties.
Well, sure.
And you
no.
just
that the kind of entertainment.
Coffee. Yeah. Just the coffee. You mean in the afternoon or evening?
Whenever they came.
We did. We did have. We used to get together. Or you know, once a week, and we'd each work on our own thing, and that was you know, crocheting, knitting, sewing, or something. And we got
oh.
together that way. But it still wasn't just socializing; it was
you were actually doing
something for ourselves,
for
you know, for our families.
Oh,
yes.
But still was a difference.
Wasn't it?
It was.
You take like
a Rishon LeZion, and a lot of times it was even Bikuli.
Bikuli had a couple time play in the school.
Yes, and for concerts,
yeah,
school.
Yeah. But yeah. Them have a small place, but Richmond Park, we built a hall. So we for how many years we had sometime 3, 4, 5 different player for
during the year.
In the winter,
that's
yeah.
Right, or even during the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
but
then
you created.
We had in the school.
But did we create their
we
own
created
board
our
entertainment?
Own entertainment.
That was
we
it.
Didn't, we didn't have TVs. Right. We had no radios until about 38, 39.
That's right.
And
yes, because I remember
the only news we had is through the papers.
Yeah.
And so we learned to create, you know, we create our own entertainment.
Yeah.
How many of you would like to go back to the good old days?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I'll tell you what, I'm not necessarily anxious to go back to the golden days, but I feel that confident that I would be able to
yes,
live in
yes.
the good old days
You're
again.
Right on.
Where the
You're
modern
beautiful.
Generation,
Couldn't
I
adapt.
Really... feel sorry for them. I really do. I think, like, even my own daughter knows how to make a fire in a wood stove
yes.
because I bought an old wood stove and she uses it when we put your chickens to heat water, you know,
yes,
to keep it
yes.
warm there. But
Otherwise,
but she's got every bloody convenience in the house, right down to a microwave, which I really don't think is necessary, you know. When the power goes off or the gas goes off or the yes. water stops, they're lost.
They're lost. They're completely lost, yeah.
But not only they, we are too. Where
well,
are you going to go and get water?
That's
now, there
exactly
isn't a
right.
well.
That's right.
You know, so I feel that we, if we have to, I still remember how and would be able to. But the young ones who have grown up in
would
a situation, like especially the grandchildren already,
yes. Oh, yes.
they haven't got a clue of packing water from a well or
right.
bringing in the water and, you know, using chips and kindling and starting a fire. They really do not.
No,
like
yes.
our my daughter or your yes. children yet had to start at least, yes. at least yes. as young kids with that. But
you know, another thing... A lot of our mothers, particularly, and I myself, made soap
yes.
out of lye and the beef fat from the animals that we butchered, and that's something that the young generation probably
just can't imagine.
No,
can't
right.
imagine.
You
that's
you
right.
had to be self-supporting. You had to, you know,
yeah.
do a lot of these things for yourself.
Well, I guess so. On the farm, you really were. You didn't really need to buy too many things. I mean, just
oh.
a few staples like coffee and tea, sugar.
You take no cross the river. 5 or 6 people, those farmers more or less have egg and milk and bake the bread.
Right.
And the rest everyone buy even the potatoes in the town. Not
Is
the
that
bread.
Right?
Well, oh man, everything changed that.
Yeah, it really has, doesn't it? You know, it's hard to believe it. People
yeah.
are
well, another thing was this cars and trucks, you know, like... Years ago, it was even from where we lived, it was all day, one day.
That's true.
To come to town, buy your groceries, and go back home. This one day is gone.
That's true.
Yeah.
And now it's nothing to make 3 trips
oh.
in one day.
Yeah, this is right. Things have really
yeah. changed,
changed a lot, haven't they?
For those 50 years, since, well, I should say from First War. Like the First War started 1914 to now, so fast everything went a 1,000 years.
Yes,
oh.
been such a
before never went
yeah.
so.
That's what they say though. That years ago things went so slowly, and all of a sudden there's been such a rapid change.
But after the Second War,
I think that's
went
why
so fast
asked.
Everything that
yeah.
you couldn't even figure.
That's right. Yeah, there's been a lot of advances made after that Second World War.
I'm afraid that we have reached, to go back to Gene's question, whether we'd be prepared to go back to the old, good old times. Things have changed so fast and so far that we are just about ready to,
go for
a degree, go back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like just from the social aspect, we have alienated ourselves in a way because we have, with our self independence
right.
of the vehicle and our own TV and our own this
we
and our own that, we
else.
Got so self-satisfied in our own little cocoon that we thought, hey, this is, you know, heaven from now on. But now we're beginning to realize that we are a social animal and
that other people.
We need other people and we got to change that. We've
yes.
got to start doing things that provide some kind of intermix. And again, we're turning back to these kind of parties and crafts,
yes,
gatherings,
yes,
and whatever, so that there's a need to get together.
Right.
So there are some aspects of the good old days that I think we're
are
yearning
returning.
For.
And we're,
yeah,
yes,
and we're returning.
That's right. Well, you're probably
the
right.
Best years were probably the late 50s, early 60s, eh?
The which years?
The best. Yeah.
Late 50s, early 60s? Mm-hmm.
I think that
everything progressed.
I think when we, well, say, like 30 or 50 years or 60 years back, like David was saying, we valued our neighbor, whereas now it's I and
me
that
matter.
You know,
that's
that
right.
Matter.
That's
and
right.
We so often forget that maybe there is somebody else that might need, you know.
Yes, a helping hand
a helping
or just
hand.
A visit or something.
Yes.
Just to give you a little example of how bad that is, we have a parent who has decided to send their children from one school to a different school,
mm-hmm.
but this different school is out of their attendance area.
Right.
So a bus transportation cannot be provided for them because the bus is provided where they're supposed to go.
Right.
And so if you want to make your own choices, then you have to sacrifice a little bit. But they're not prepared to. They have decided the best for their kids is that high school, and they're going to have that child go to that high school at whatever expense.
Yes.
They want us to reroute the bus.
To provide.
That would mean that children who are now taking the bus at 7:30 would be having to take it at 7 in order to reroute this bus to go an extra 7.5 miles. And then back about 5, up to a corner. Then they would go on another road, which would make much difference from what they're doing now. But anyway, you know, there would be about 12 miles more that the bus would be making in order to get these kids. Now, in the area where the bus starts, there are 13 children, and a lot of them are little kids.
Yes.
But this family thinks nothing of demanding that bus be rerouted because their children are entitled to the best of education.
Oh.
But isn't that what I said?
That's
that
right.
We're thinking of I.
That's right. That's
exactly
right. That's
saying.
What I mean.
That's
you know, that just to show
example.
You an example how bad it is.
But surely
you know?
They're not going to bend to those people's
demands. Oh, well, no.
Demands.
They're not.
But that
just shows you how demanding
how
people
selfish.
Are. I am important.
Yeah.
You know, what
but those
I
other
believe
13,
in.
Children.
Certainly their children are entitled to the best
and
education. But
we remind you, you are our representative, but so are we the representative of the other 13.
Yes, yes.
You know, but I count.
Mm.
And that's, in many, many instances you can see that where
yeah. Well,
the me is
people,
so important.
Yeah, people got to be very selfish and...
Well, I don't know, long ago, the people, you know, helping.
Well, more neighbors.
So
neighborly,
yeah.
Yes. You need any help, you need just
ask.
Ask and like put the barn or house or anything if heavy from the log, you know. Sometimes you got a 6-7 neighbor come and then you go help him. But later on, man.
Well, even with the women, they had quilting bees,
yes.
Feather stripping bees,
yes.
Wool carding, quilt making. I think we have to be fair to say that in a case of some kind of a tragedy, people do rally even today.
Yes,
you know, there's been a fire burnout
yeah.
or someone has a bad accident or whatever,
yes.
and the help is needed.
Right.
There are still people who remember and will rally.
I think a lot
yeah,
of
there's
it,
still neighbors that get together
right.
and
oh,
do
yeah.
things. It's
yeah.
just
but
in
I
certain
think
cases.
I think it's because of the conveniences we have that sort of just has a tendency to get to sort of
make you that way,
make us that way,
so independent.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we sort of have a tendency to well, we've got the TV, well, we won't go out.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the radio. I've got everything at home. Why do I want to go out?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's one thing.
And so you know. It's because we have these things that we have grown that way.
Yeah, I suppose.
And you know, I have means to get out. If I want to get out, I've got
exactly.
the means and I go.
Transportation.
And I don't have to depend on the neighbor, because when I feel like I want to come back, I'm going to come back.
That's right.
You know, you
not
don't
depend
want to
on anybody that way. Yeah.
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 So it's the luxuries that we have that have
maybe spoiled us and made us selfish.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
right. Yeah. Well, this has been really interesting. I learned some things tonight. You might as well shut it off unless somebody else wants to say anything. What else have we missed that we would want to talk about?
Just
shut
it off.
I probably have.
Shut it off and then let's
I probably
see.
Haven't asked questions that I should have been asking yet.
Well, unless you wanted to know, like, on the different efforts that went into maybe making some of the changes in the community-wise, you know, community
yes.
type of changes. You know, you've talked about the economic, the rural economic kind of a thing mainly, and
yes.
the standard of living, but from the community aspect, what sorts of things were organized, and you know how they organized them, like for example bringing in the phone or bringing in the power or
yes.
or the agricultural organizations, you know, all those things were efforts that made some difference. They made an impact on
that's
what
true.
The way life went, and
yes.
you know, that's something that you didn't
yeah,
discuss.
We didn't
another thing though too we never mentioned is the centralization of the schools.
That's right.
Yes,
you know,
that was a big
and that
change
has,
too.
That has been partly to blame for the individual districts losing touch with one another,
that.
Because all the children are bused into town. So
yes.
you know, then you know the parents go into town. And then that
made a difference
that,
too. I guess
community
that's right.
neighborliness
that
has been lost.
That spirit just sort of was
yeah.
lost, wasn't
yes.
it? That's right. When did phones come to the north of the river, for example? When did country people start getting phones?
I don't know. We
after
had
we
a long
to the
hob
place.
First
we
had a phone and a
in
the
store?
And a fence. And a fence.
Yes, but that already was
yeah.
rural.
We were already
yeah.
we built our house in 55 started 56, and we didn't get the phone until after.
Yeah.
So it'll be about 58 to 60 where we got the telephone.
Seems
no,
to me when
we
were at
Elscott, we had the telephone before we had the power. We had
yeah.
the telephone, that's right.
When we were at Elscott, that was in what, 60, I guess, we were at Elscott.
Years old.
Huh?
Yeah,
in the 50s.
Mother and Dad
Emily
had phone then, I know, because we phoned them.
Emily was born in 53.
And you had a phone then?
But at first, you know, it was just strung along the fence line.
Okay, tell me about that. Strung along the fence, that's what he was saying.
Because the phone line carried the phone that was to, the, like at Belitas, you know, there was that one country phone
yeah.
for
yes.
the whole area there.
Right.
Well, then when the rural phone...
No, first phone we had across the river, Gorman and
yes.
Kirkpatrick.
I know,
yes.
no, but I
and Saudi.
But that was our
yeah, like the overhaul.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm
overhauls.
Saying up
and
to Rachel
Mrs.
Clark.
Belida
yeah.
come 1930, she
yeah.
got the store, so she
did
got
get a phone,
phone
then.
Yeah.
1930.
Yeah.
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 There was a
yeah.
so people
a
would
local
come to her
phone.
Place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you paid 10 cents, I remember, to
yeah.
make a
yeah.
phone call. Like we wanted to make a phone call, we'd go to Gorman's,
yeah.
and there was a 10 cent charge.
But
yeah.
you wouldn't be phoning neighbors. You'd obviously
oh,
be
no.
phoning
it was
that
for
that
some business.
Business. Or
no.
business.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there were no neighbors.
No, not
but like Richard Park.
You can phone to Athabasca or Edmonton or to Gorman from Kirkpatrick. That's all.
Those were AGT phones.
No.
No.
Then the communities, you're talking about phones on the fence posts, were mutuals, weren't they? There,
yeah,
the
mutuals.
There was a Saudi,
yeah,
Saudi
yeah.
mutual.
Yeah.
There was overhauls. And then remember, Catherine was one of the first ones, Catherine and Joe, to have a phone. And if we wanted to, when we lived with at the the home place, we never had a phone. So we would go down to Catherine's to phone. Mm.
That meant 10, 12 people on one line.
Yeah,
yes.
yeah,
yeah.
That's
oh,
right.
yes.
And you
we
phones,
did have as many.
And
as
you
38.
You had 38 people on your line?
Yes, sir, of course.
And you, there used to be, I remember this Lovegren, Chick, whatever her name is anyway, Chick Lovegren, used to be the phone operator. You'd ring central, and then you would...
central in town here?
Yes. And then they would connect you either to long distance or to what other party you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And only the people on your own line, and each one had a different
ring.
Ring, like one long and one short, or two longs and a short, or three
mm-hmm. shorts and a long, or three longs, or
yeah,
but anyway, whichever. Yeah, whatever.
We had 38 then.
You had quite a.
It was in the late 60s that AGT bought off his mutual.
The defense post.
Uh-huh.
It was
the
60s, maybe.
I think in the 70s already.
And then we had
just a minute. Oh, okay. We'll talk about when the mutual. Okay.
We had the 18 first. We were Frank Malik organized, so we had an defense post. And then we had the government was selling telegraph line
mm-hmm.
from Matabasca to
Calling River.
So we bought the telegraph line to Deep Creek, and we had a phone 38. But if you want phone to Athabasca, well, you can walk to Athabasca and come back.
Sooner.
And the people still in the phone. So lots of time, you know, it says, make me mad, he says, well, cook your cabbage tomorrow. Today we want to talk. And them start to laughing, and you don't know who. Oh, but some of them. But
oh,
after
anyway,
we got 14, after we got... Four wires. So we got the 14 was way, way bad.
Better. What were you asking, Gene?
About the mutuals and IGT bought out the mutual.
AGT. When was that?
We have the, remember in, we have it in our vault, Mike. That
I think it started in the late
60s.
It was in the
late
60s.
Sure.
Late
60s
or
early
70s.
Late?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Because
yeah.
I remember.
Oh,
oh yeah,
I
was saying in the...
In late
70s
or early 70s, I think.
What
70s.
What did you have for a number? Do you remember your phone number?
We got...
What would the numbers be like?
4751.
Four numbers. 4751. No 675 or anything.
Oh, yes.
No, no. Was there?
No.
Because I remember looking at Echoes in Athabasca, they have a number like 128 or 156 for a number here in town.
We had the 4751, and Nick had the... Nick now had a 675-4750.
Oh, yes.
And before we don't have a 675,
just
a
just the
four,
four
like
our
was a 4751. And Nick, I know for sure, was a 4750.
Yeah, but it's because now you're able to phone through Athabasca and all the area without having to pay that 10 cents or whatever the fee
but
was. You now dial
still,
the phone number.
We was 68, so and still we had our own phone.
Yeah,
AGT, but probably later on.
Yeah, early
70s.
I think, I'm sure it was late.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was 68, we never had a 675, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We had just like I said, those four
in numbers. I'm sure it's in the 70s.
And we had, because I was in a committee too, Bill Cruz, me, and... Walter Clark moved to Penticton, so Paul Kravitz was, I think, three of us was in there.
Mm-hmm. Going back to that centralization of schools, what started all that centralization? Was it people in town that...
this Parr.
Edwin Parr?
Edwin Parr, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It was his idea.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
He pushed...
Oh, yeah.
Well,
but that was throughout all of the province. So he was the head in this area, but that was something, I don't know whether it was through Eberhardt they started that. Or
in 1935, the school divisions were formed.
1935?
That's right.
Okay.
And even though that began in 1935, all the areas didn't go into school divisions right away, because, for example, when I went out to teach at Lac La Biche area in 43, there was Athabasca had all of that yet. The Lac La Biche school division was formed in 44. So, you know, there were lots of country schools that were still like districts,
right.
And it finally spread out to the whole province.
Mm-hmm.
After that happened, then they began to get this idea that you had to have better high school education for the children. So they began to, first of all, get a central spot for a high school, and all sorts of means were incorporated to try to get kids to attend these high schools.
Yes.
And it was really after the war that the other type of centralization began to be pushed, like where you lowered, you took everybody, junior high as well as high school, into the central school, because, you know, the idea that it would be science equipment, there would be audiovisual, all kinds of advantages.
Yes.
And elementary were left in the country. And pretty soon, even the elementary, the people started to sell land, the number of families diminished, the number of children went down, the enrollment went down, so they began to put children into classrooms where you had split classes and overloaded classrooms, and people began to get disenchanted with that. So different ones began to insist that their children be allowed to go on the bus, which was going by the door anyway, to the central school. And people themselves really contributed to the closing of the small school.
And to the small school, teacher don't want to go
teach.
That's
right.
You know,
they
have
problems. That's right.
All the time to get the
teachers
to
go out.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, you could get a real good doctor to the small hospital.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So same thing.
There was a real teacher shortage in the late
40s. Oh, definitely. That was the other thing.
6-week teachers, correspondents,
that's
the supervisors.
Right.
Yes,
yeah.
That's true.
Especially, you see, with the war.
Yes.
The number
of... There was such a shortage, I remember myself.
Right.
In Fairhaven, I don't know, one of the teachers got sick, and I myself, like I was in high school, and Agnes Richards and I, taught the lower grades, you know, were supervising.
Mm-hmm.
We were just, you know, teaching there just as best as we could, because there was just
nobody
to help
over.
Them. Yes.
My goodness.
That's what started the ball rolling.
Mrs. Johnson came
really,
after,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
Oh, the lack of teachers, you see.
I think the parents combined with the idea that they thought they would be.
When Mr. Gault came to the meetings.
Yeah, he was a school inspector.
A school inspector, right? And he would have a meeting with the local school board.
Five people. District.
Well, from five different districts.
Yeah, district and the Richmond Park School Board. And he explained us. He says, put it hard to get the teacher, one thing, because short of teacher, and second, you got the real poor road. And you're going to have it for a long time, poor road,
unless you get
the centralized school, then
they have
you're
to
going
to
have a road. Okay, so we agree with the people was against, but we have a 2 or 3 meeting, and people says, okay. So then, we had the election and elect 3 people to that central school, Walter Pluck, Pete Krawitz, and me.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to Minook.
Minook is where Carr was.
Municipal.
And McIntyre was at Minook.
So we went there, and them told us what kind of a school that. And I says, if we get the school, he says, that kind of a road, what we going to do in case the rain? And God says, Shalapa, he says, I told you at the meeting, Richmond Park, don't worry. He says, wait till we get the school. So we got the school. And we had the 3 teachers. And 1 week, kids went to school, and then 2 weeks, rain never stopped. So the Walter Labbitt was holding the kids from across Deep Creek.
From Laura.
Yeah, and he was going through the Deep Creek and the bridge, but Losh bring about 2 feet a door to the bridge because too low, you know, so if he lift a little bit. So he stopped there. So somebody phoned, so Galovich come with the car to my place, and we went a little ways and we stopped. So we walked to the bridge, so he got the even picture. We took the picture to municipality and showed. And so Charlie Gura come with the cat, and Bill Koraluk with the tractor, and them have a heck of a time to pull that bus from back. And 2 weeks no school.
For 2 weeks?
Loss was going, that was in the Sunday, Loss was going from town, and I run and the road and stop and start to talk. He was a counselor.
Well, he was the counselor.
And boy, he don't want
to
even listen. He says, leave me alone. He says, no money. So then, next day, Monday, me and Galovich, we went to...
Mr. Galovich was the teacher.
The principal.
So we went to Galt. Mm-hmm. And we went to Galt and started to talk, and he says, well, what you think? I says, I think if we get at least 3 miles gravel, you know, there by the Deep Creek and 1 mile by Richmond Park, by the how they made the new road. I says, so maybe. But I says, this way, I says, you promised us we're going to get that and that. Now I says, we have to go back to old system because what we're going to do, I says, the kids couldn't come. So he took the phone and he phoned Edmonton, that was a Monday, and Wednesday, big crusher come and truck, and then put 13 miles
gravel,
and then opened the school again.
Well, that was from Laura. What about the Mercury kids?
Well, there was a road not bad, you know.
The road was better there.
It was real bad.
How about the Big Cooley kids? Where did they go?
Big Cooley never did go to Richmond Park, did they?
Did they? Well, Brody's kids did.
And my brother went to
Athabasca.
Brody's, Natation kids, and all those, even John Daring, up to
Mrs. Laporte's, I guess, you know, on that side of the creek, they all went to Richmond Park. But
John Daring, for a week or two, kids was coming there, but after... They went to Athabasca.
Okay, well, that was a type of centralization because, you know, in other places too, they had where they centralized smaller ones into a sort of a district centralization. But, and that, you know, was necessitated by what you mentioned, you know, shortage of teachers and like he says, the roads. But after a while, that wasn't enough, and it began to pull out into the central area right in town, which even deadened the area completely.
Yeah, but could I just say something now? You talked about the shortage of teachers. When Violet Reynolds came out to Big Cooley, like she was the first teacher at Big Cooley, and she was my first teacher.
About
1930.
Okay.
There was a surplus of teachers then. And I think that they had actually got dozens of applications, and they just, you know, and that was the case, and I think Clouday could verify that. You know, there was a lot of girls particularly went in to teach. I think it was just 1 year that they went to a normal school. And there was dozens of them applied for every school, and there just wasn't enough schools. And then I think the reason why there became a shortage is when the war broke out in 1938, a lot of the men went to war. And I remember Fred Dorward was teaching at Big Cooley. He was one of the men. There was, you know, you know that. And then it was during the war years where there became that acute shortage of teachers.
Mm-hmm. And even after, because when the men even did come back, a lot of them went to university there.
Yes.
You know,
they weren't
had
interested in going back to teaching. Some lost their lives. Yeah.
That's right.
But this is what started, because there was a surplus of teachers prior to that.
Mm. That's when they had, a six-week or three-month courses or something?
Well, then after the war, there was this crash courses. I think you went to.
I went to War Emergency.
Yes.
But after I was teaching for about 5 years, they had those 6 week courses.
Yeah.
They used to have correspondence supervisors.
Yes.
And they had the 6 week, out of grade 12. You had to have your full grade 12.
Right.
And then you went for a 6 week course and you went out to teach.
Yeah. And that you took in Edmonton, the 6 week course. Yeah.
I went to War Emergency, and then I had to go to summer school the next summer and, you know, in addition to that, and every summer for I don't know how many summers after that.
Yes.
But I had been teaching probably 5 years when that six-week course thing came in.
And War Emergency was a three-month course.
3 months, and then the next one, only the one that I went to was 3 months.
What year was that, Olga?
That was 43.
43.
And then the next one, after we came out at the end of October, I went out to Dubai School on November 3rd. The next batch went in for 6 weeks. I mean, 6 months,
six
I should
months.
Say. 6 months, yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
And now it's 4 years.
No, then of course it was 7 months.
Oh yeah,
and then
just
of course they went the full
year,
10 months.
Because Albert Raven, he went two for 6 months.
Yes, I had. I asked him to do a write-up for us, and I asked Emilia because he didn't know that you went for this war measure.
I went to the war measure.
Emilia went before, and she went the whole year.
Oh, did she?
Yes.
She was going to do a write-up.
You know what? I don't know when she went the whole year because she came out
to
teach at Hilo in January. See, they also
they were just student teaching then. She was just student teaching.
Oh,
see, they went out because we used to have those student teachers come out to Fairhaven as well.
Uh-huh.
They were, and they still have student teachers even now.
Well, they did have student teachers in those days.
But they came out, I think it was either a week or two. And we used to have them in Fairhaven.
But Amelia came on to Hilo.
I know, but
and
I mean,
taught Amelia from January till June.
Well, maybe it was.
Well, she was going to do
a
write-up.
She was a qualified teacher of that.
I'm going to have to remind her because she was going to do a little write-up about her history of.
I didn't. I thought that she went the full year. I didn't realize that.
I don't know how long she went, but I know that when she came to teach in Hilo, it was in January, and she finished the year because there was another teacher that came up till Christmas, and that one left, and the media replaced her.
And like you say, now then finally it's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, four, and now they
it's
even
four
got
plus year of internship.
They have all these teachers that came out of university. Yes, they're paying them $15,000 a year, and they work under a teacher in a classroom. And they're not, I guess they're fully qualified teachers.
Yeah, they are.
But they don't have their own classroom. They just,
they are under a cooperating teacher, but they are to radiate throughout, you know, and get as much experience
as possible.
But
that's
you know what? I don't know whether it's a boycott. It hasn't been termed as that. You know, this is just my own opinion. But, like we've all applied, you have to for so many students you qualify to apply for so many.
Yes,
we applied for four. That's what we for every 500 you can get one, and then we were told that we could get six actually because the cities have chosen not to use too many as many as they are entitled to, and they've already filled all the positions they would like to fill. There are all kinds of these interns who have. Been 18 months or a year out of their teacher training university, but they're not applying. So far, we have had only one application.
Again, probably they don't want to go out there to Lakovish or.
And ours is not the only case. We've already checked throughout the rural areas, and they're not applying for rural.
And they say terms are hard, and people need work.
Well, maybe there isn't a surplus anymore. Maybe we're looking at a shortage in the next few years.
Well, that's another possibility too.
But Jean or Vi, you would be more familiar with that. I know when Lois graduated, that'd be about 5-6 years ago, at that time she had to teach for 2 years before she got a permanent certificate.
It's still like that, Anna.
Yeah.
It's still like
that. That's still the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in a way, that's a sort of a period of internship.
It is in a way.
In a way.
And when you take a job, you're on probation the first year too, so it's. I mean, you're fully on your own, but it's still a kind of a
internship.
Yeah, well,
in a sense, you still seek advice from other teachers, not just how to.
If they either you make it or you break
you.
It's actually the superintendent of schools that.
That
gives you the final okay whether you are.
He writes the report.
Yes.
Yeah, he inspects you.
You mean that. Your school in Bikuli built 1930?
I think it was about then.
Because here,
ours
Dad,
was built in 1930.
We built 1929, and therefore we opened
started
the school.
In March 1930.
No, in 31, David.
And George Raven, and your dad, and Martin Hine. So he was about 3 years. At least 3 years on the board, for 4 years, and after he says that he leaving us, he joined you guys and started with the school.
Well, look, I turned 7. My birthday is the 24th of September, and I turned 7 that year when that and the school opened up that year. So that would be in 31. In 31.
A year after.
Yeah.
It's like they,
30,
they built
31.
The school there in the
That's
fall
right.
and
maybe
school
he helped
it,
but I know he was a Trier, for sure, he was in a board.
Martin, who was this?
Hein, oh. Her dad, in Richmond Park School. Yeah. Because, like, we organized the district, so I was a... Your dad, her dad, and how you call Sidney Tan.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And Wallach, Martin Hein, Wallinu, Lee, Gura, Rabin, Bertus, Malik, and Zmuda. And Bodnar and Gizison was against. They want to have a school across the road from the hall. Oh. And there was a water standing there. So inspector come for how his name I forget. So he come there and we couldn't even speak. But then how Gura speak and Martin Hines. So we all went there and show him. Inspector says forget. So anyhow, them don't want to send even kids to the school. We opened the school.
It never mind.
But
after that,
I think inspector wrote the letter. So then gives his son. Send these kids, yeah. And then Tommy come later on to school.
Yeah, but I think by his
they
dad
had a school there, didn't they? They would call it Spruce Park or something there by Gieselson.
Oh, that was later.
Oh, that was I think Amelia came out of Normal then. As a just and before that there was.
After 45,
remember J.K. Gieselson was courting one. There was two sisters there. One of them was a teacher. Oh, I can't think of that. But anyway,
yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, there was a few teachers there. I would say that it must have been almost in the 40s when that Spruce Park School was built.
Really?
Yes.
So my dad must have thought I was going to go to Richmond Park, and I ended up going to Bethune because then they built the school there.
Yeah, but you see, I was going to say...
Well, we organized the district, mm-hmm. and your dad belonged on this side
yes.
that...
of the line there.
Line. You see, like Mike, he was already belonged to...
Yes.
To Yedder. Yeah.
So that was a dividing line,
I
yeah,
see.
So your dad and Sidney Tan.
Sidney
Tan. So, you know, like we immigrants, so we supplied the logs. And we work, and like your dad pay $10, Sidney pay $10, and Guran, Bertus buy the shingle. All men should they give land free.
And
like we supply the spruce, we cut the logs, you know, and work and plaster and everything like that.
Bought the windows.
Yeah, and I forget who was made heater. I think Rosa Laporte. He donate.
The pot-bellied stove.
Yeah, yeah, the barrel.
The gas barrel stove. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think Rosa Laporte donate that that heater.
Oh,
so then, but I know those people pay $10 each,
right?
And we was working, you know, and build the school. So he was three years mm-hmm. in a board
mm-hmm.
at the Richmond Park, Martin.
And in those days.
Another reason why your dad wasn't too anxious to belong, or there wasn't any big coolie school, but see, there was a deep coolie, and they had quite a job here, just brushing a trail, and it was terribly difficult climbing up that deep coolie.
Even in the winter, after
it blew
after
in,
the
you know, there
was
a lot of snow.
You got a heck of a time, you know, go through that.
Yes, I guess so. She wouldn't believe the things, the kind of school that people used to go to compared to something now that they have. Oh, yeah, walk for sure.
Another thing we had, I'm sure that in the Youngville district, because, you know, that was the school district
mm-hmm.
in Saudi, they had school all winter, but in Big Cooley when we started, because the children had so far to go, and a lot of them, you know, a lot of us were 6-7 year olds, and we had 2.5-3 miles
to go
or more
travel,
to go. We didn't have school during January, February. School didn't start till the 1st of March.
Closed for Christmas, and
never started.
The cold
was
months.
That the case in Richmond
Park? That's right.
Is that
that's
right?
What I was going to say.
But Mike said they had it in
And besides that, they didn't have school during July and August, the same like we don't know. But in the wintertime,
they never had school.
Actually, for about 2.5 months, because, you know, we vote for Christmas, about a day or so before Christmas Day, and then you never went to school until 1st of March.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was cold, you know.
Was a school already?
And they didn't have clothes.
But you don't have that place or what?
Not wear as warm as they have now.
That's right.
Dad's brother.
Parents would, well, they'd have to probably drive them in a...
And he had horses, and later dad would send him some more money, and finally in the end he says I can't pay you back, so you take the farm.
Well, just like in 1920 in Saskatchewan, the two friends, you know, was real good friends in the country, but one guy went and he make a real good money, and the other guy...
It's not private, it's a pioneer story. Go ahead.
And the other guy, you know, he was between the farmer, he was broke. So, that Johnny says, you know, Peter, you better come and work. I need the help. He says, okay, but he says, I got no money later on if I get a good crop. So anyhow, Peter worked for Johnny for 7 years. No money. And after Johnny says, you know, Peter, he says, you take the farm over and I'm going to work for you.
That's a good note to stop on.
Yeah. Well, you see.